If you're haunted and harassed by your own inner critic, if you've ever been curious about why hypnosis works so well, if you're a seasoned hypnotist, or if you suspect that the inner critic is actually hypnotizing you to hold back from reaching the greatness that you know deep down is inside you, lean in and get inspired to get out of your comfort zone and create your one precious life with purpose and intention. If you like this show, you'll love my powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, because it gives you crystal clear guidance and direction and illuminates an ingenious way to make triumphant decisions, no matter how stuck you feel or how confused you were. This powerful hypnosis audio is my gift to you when you go to theimpostermonster.com. Again, that's theimpostermonster.com. Don't forget the. Theimpostermonster.com. And yes, I'm done saying it. Thank you. Thank you from the bottom of my heart for listening. I'm Lori Hammond, and I'm truly grateful for you. I am so excited about today's guest. When I first started geeking out about hypnosis, I would listen to Jason Lynette's podcast. Every time I was in my car, I just binged listened. And I thought, this guy is so awesome. He's making a difference in the world. And I always thought, whenever I listen to a podcast, I think it would be so cool to meet this person. And I met Jason at HypnoThoughts when I was brand new. I had just started doing hypnosis full time. He was so gracious, and I'm so excited to tell you about Jason, who is a hypnotic influence expert who helps entrepreneurs and business owners close more premium sales. As a certified professional hypnotist, Jason has dedicated nearly two decades to helping his clients harness the science of positive persuasion strategies to quickly and easily rewrite negative thought patterns. He reveals the secrets of hypnotic communication and shares specific business influence systems to supercharge business growth. This isn't about tricking or manipulating people. It's about helping your prospects to ethically sell themselves into your products or services. Jason is the host of Hypnotic Language Hacks podcast. His TEDx talk, Rethinking Rapport, is available on YouTube. He is the best-selling author of Work Smart Business, a five-star rated book on Amazon's top books on neuro-linguistic programming. While it's great to operate a million-dollar brand, Jason is most proud to do so while being at home each night with his wife and children. Jason, thank you so much for being here today.
Lori, it's awesome to be here. Thanks for the invite.
This has been an incredible thing for me. I was on your podcast, I think about a year and a half back, maybe, and
half a year ago, and then actually no, 1 year ago, and then a year and a half ago as well. So you've been on twice.
Time flies. Yeah, yeah. We spoke just as we went into lockdown about how to work over Zoom, and prior to that, talked a little bit, I think, about weight loss and hypnosis and putting yourself out there on video. So you are a person, when I do my imposter monster trainings from time to time, usually they're fairly small Zoom calls. So I'll go around the virtual room and ask each person who their hypnotic idol is. And I do this because I want to set them up to understand that they can model that person. And 70% of the room every time says Jason Lynette. So I know my audience is going to be so excited to have you here. And I would love for us to talk. Well, we have a lot of things to talk about, but the goal is going to be to help people who have that inner critic that's trying to keep them from taking action to start doing so. So before we start in earnest, is there anything that you just want to share about your own journey, perhaps even in the context of overcoming imposter syndrome and getting from where you were to where you are today?
Yeah, I'd say that there's a small sort of advantage that was there early on, which was that I grew up in a family where everybody was an entrepreneur. So my parents, you know, I remember early on that we had a big backyard growing up that then became a medium-sized backyard because they were wedding photographers, and they knocked off back of the living room and expanded the house a good, you know, 40 feet by 20 feet wide. And that became the photography studio, which, you know, there'd be the times of them selling the wedding packages to the couple to be in the living room and then doing the photography back there. So hearing all of that in the background, you know, all of this admittedly negative language around it. It's going to be slow your first year in business. Here are the statistics that most small businesses fail. I didn't grow up hearing that. So from a place of, let's call it ignorance is bliss, I didn't go into this with the expectation that it had to be hard. You know, I would see them and they were in an industry that a lot of that was built by, you know, going to the bridal shows that would happen several times a year, putting up the big booth of all the photos and kind of knowing the local market as to what images they would have out, what books were there, and how it was always a customized message in terms of who was in front of them, which someone else could hear the story that I just told. And they could go, well, that was your advantage. I didn't grow up with that. Yet, as we know with hypnotic language patterns and hypnotic principles, if you can step into that reality, if you can vocalize it, you can easily create it. So it's just that question of what would happen for you differently if you just simply embrace the idea that this could be fun. This could be extremely easy. And again, it's always about that interaction with that audience. And that's where our best impact is often created.
You mentioned something as you were speaking that you had an idea of what the other vendors would have up. You kind of knew that audience. Will you talk a little bit more about why that's so important?
Well, for them, and again, this was external to my parents, that they would know that, I have to tell the story with the anecdote first. Here's the woman that it was the fourth time getting married, yet she had hired my parents every single time, as she put it. I don't know about this one. We'll see. At least I'm keeping Mike and Marion around. Was kind of the relationships that they would build. So not every image up on the display for my parents and their business was the young couple. It was the mixture of everything from the elderly couple to, they were down in Virginia Beach, Virginia, all the different sort of ethnicity cultures that were down there. So whoever came by, they could show, oh, look, there's your pastor. Oh, look, there's your rabbi, and actually bring people into the story. So kind of early on, the whole mindset of selling by way of metaphor, of building that connection, not to be that person who is just simply selling something, but instead sharing an experience and inviting people to take the next step.
I love that. Will you talk a little more about selling by way of metaphor?
Yeah. So as we look at the examples, which I know you've got a mixed audience here where some of them are in our shared community, but then also other people who have an interest towards improving themselves. People do business with people. People make connections with people. And I see far too many people often try to hide behind a brand, try to hide behind an identity, and instead just to simply put themselves out there. And just as a side note to this, when we look at some of the major markets that are out there, whether it's building confidence, whether it's weight loss, whether it's exercise improvement, it's a little nudge in the right direction to realize that there are so many options for these different things. And at the end of the day, and I tend to take more of a positive mindset toward this, all of those different methods technically work. It's a matter of that person putting it into use and then choosing to make it work. So there's always that sort of, as I'd call it, student responsibility inside of our own journey in terms of improving. So to look at it from that perspective, we've got that opportunity inside of it to go, here's what we can do. Yet at the end of the day, when it's someone making the decision to have some sort of energy exchange, let's phrase it that way, whether it's spending time with, whether it's making that phone call and connecting for a half an hour, whether it's paying for a service, whether it's buying a product, part of the emotional connection as to why they're doing that is because they've built a connection with you. And as soon as we again, step into that mindset that it's not just about what I say and what I do, it's about that connection. So this is where, back to metaphor, if we have stories, share them. If we have our own personal triumphs and challenges, that things that we've overcome, bring that appropriately inside of what we do. Now, I share a slightly negative story around this briefly, which ends positively, which for those that are curious, one of the podcasts that I host, we have only ever deleted one episode. And it was a bit of a jump to make that decision, but basically we found out that one person, good luck guessing, had completely fabricated his backstory. All sorts of just blatant lies. And to say it politely, there's something else that must have been going on, and I hope this person's getting help. But it was a big decision to go in and say, we're just deleting that episode. But rather than turn that into the opportunity of, how dare this person? Let's all hate on him together. No, it became, well, there's a learning lesson that comes out of this. We can bring our stories into it. And I know some people are often timid or afraid of doing that. Yet it's the way that if I was to tell my story, I had a hobby of doing magic. And then from that hobby, there was this dissatisfaction with the fact that it was based upon a lie. I have here an ordinary pack of playing cards. No, they're not. But then the need for exposition. Why would I be carrying around cards? So that's where I got into theater in terms of the backstage production. I was more interested in the wizard behind the curtain role. How does this all work? What are all the moving pieces? But then about the same time as when I first saw Hypnosis, I saw a stage show. It was my friends who volunteered. And for the first time, I saw something pure that was based solely in communication. And I began by doing programs for high schools, motivational assemblies, and then discovered the hypnotherapy side. Now, to pull out of this for a moment, everything I've just shared is absolutely true. Now, what I've done, though, is metaphorically, I've shined that spotlight, though, in the places where I want you to focus. You know, does it matter that I go off and tell the tangent around working in this smaller theater company where they were trying to break all the union rules and we were barely getting paid? No, because that's not necessary to the story. So it's by shining that spotlight metaphorically in the places where we want that focus to be, just like poetry, just like music, just like a good movie, people are going to draw out of that story what they need from that experience.
That's brilliant. You mentioned the man behind the curtain and you mentioned rapport. And I agree with you 100% that it's that all the techniques really work. And I really think that people buy from people. They don't necessarily buy products, they buy outcomes, and they want to know the man behind the curtain. Jason, when I sent you the questionnaire, you wrote something that I would love. I think this is a beautiful place to dive into it, where you said, actually, it's not. I'm gonna hold on that now that I'm looking at the specifics. But will you talk a little?
We call that a
cliffhanger,
yeah.
Yes, that's a cliffhanger. It's gonna be really awesome when we get there. Will you talk a little bit more about rapport, the man behind the curtain, and telling your story, making yourself public? Because as I shared at the beginning, so many people look up to you and so many people admire you. And it's because you've put yourself out there. You show up over and over and over consistently. And I know that's really scary for people. Mm-hmm. So will you talk to me a little bit about what's given you the courage to do that and why you do it?
So I have to throw a disclaimer to this, which is that as hypnotists, we know that words have power. As someone who studies linguistics and is constantly looking at how do we tweak a message, that even in marketing, sometimes it's the game of this headline versus that headline and just this fascination around language. There's a trend out there of cultures reclaiming words, which just simply by that statement, many people know the references that we can make here in terms of that. I love this as a concept of what happens if we reclaim an idea. So there's a moment I was in conversation with a friend of mine. Disclaimer to this story is I was not seeing this psychologist. It's a psychologist who happens to be a friend. And she interrupted me at one point and goes, okay, whatever you just said, like if you were one of my patients, I would label you as like the most high functioning ADHD person and, you know, anxiety and high functioning anxiety. But she goes, it's working so damn well for you. And I heard that and I fed it back to go, are you trying to claim that if something is positive for you, it cannot be diagnosed? She goes, I think I like that premise. I go, I'm taking that. So this mindset though, of looking at, you know, what it is that we can start to build. So a couple of phrases that some of our hypnotic culture would not like this, what I'm about to say. But again, if we claim it as our own, similar to the guy who came in, and as soon as he said this, he was one of my clients in the back of my head, I went, I'm going to do that now. That sounds good. He says, for the last 10 years, I've been trying to lose weight. For the last 10 years, I've been fighting with myself, with my nutrition and my emotions and everything. I'm going to stop working on the problem. I'm going to start working on the solution. I'm going to start eating in a way to supplement the weight training that I want to get into. Yet from what I've looked at, this is not an overnight thing. And what he said next was, for this to be effective, I need to become responsibly addicted to this.
Ooh.
And I went, oh yeah, I know, right? Yeah. Appropriately obsessed is the one that I've often used for certain concepts. So it's where I may sometimes use the inner language of the constant positive dissatisfaction with success, which is again, a positive dissatisfaction. So that place to go, okay, so here's a campaign that's currently running. that, okay, since we launched this thing kind of quietly, it's brought in a good amount of income. It's to be positive about that, but also go, how can this reach a bigger audience? And I think that last couple of words there is the key to a lot of how I look at this, which is that it comes around to the audience to whom we're speaking, where there's a line that I heard, I think it was Igor Ledohosky one time in one of his programs said that very often public speaking is a fear that comes from someone to present something that's not necessarily who they are. And I love that, but I also do put it in the category like the comedian Bill Maher, who says, I don't know if that's a fact, but it sure sounds like it's true. And I just love that as a premise though. But to look at how if I'm on the platform and I'm feeling nervous, it means I'm internalizing part of the message. And for anybody to step into a role of now broadcasting something to a big audience, I found that something changes inside of that messaging as soon as we put all that ownership, all the understanding on the people who are out there in front of us. And really it comes about from, again, that exchange of energy. If they're responding, if they're not responding, that's what's telling us what's a hit. That's what's telling us when it's not a hit. And it becomes this place where we can look at times and see, here's all these testimonials. Here's all these people raving about programs. Here's all these people on a weekly basis joining new programs, which builds this, I use the term of unstoppable confidence. It builds this resiliency inside that, okay, so here's this one person who has, let's say, an alternate opinion. We'll leave it at that. At which point we know they're not in our audience. They're not the people that we're speaking to. So this was something that from now hosting two podcasts, it's become even more evident, the metaphor of a dog whistle, that it, assuming you had trained your dog to respond to the dog whistle, you go to the dog park and you blow it. You don't want every dog coming running. You want your dog to come running. And as soon as you can step into that understanding that it's not just about you, it's about that communication in terms of what you can share. Yeah. That's where suddenly the tables begin to turn. And I found a lot of that block tends to fall down, where it becomes, again, this almost ethical responsibility, where I know there's people who are going to be listening to that program, this one on Wednesday, this one on Thursday. There are people waiting for the next class to be scheduled when, you know, one hasn't even yet been scheduled. But by putting that ownership external, this is what turns it into that drive. And by doing so, I'll say, first of all, it creates this incredible resiliency in the business, where things continue to grow because we're continuously putting out content. And even so, the stuff that we don't like, I've got videos where I'm going, it's like, oh, that was 8 years ago and 40 pounds heavier and things I don't agree with anymore. The fact that now, because of the longevity of my business, I'll have people who reach out and go, I started following your videos in 2012 and I can see the evolution over time. And I'm curious, what's the next step of this? What as I go, well, that's the brand that I'm building out right now. So by putting that ownership on that audience, it takes that sort of self-criticism out of the equation, I found. Because again, if I go into that mindset of, this is that inner dialogue that I teach a lot of people, if we're trying to get on other people's podcasts, if we're trying to get in media, if we're trying to get in the newspaper, these people have space to fill. You have a message that matters. You have a message that can change people's lives and change people's businesses. And again, some may not like the language of this, but it's really the internal dialogue of how dare you not make it easy for people to find you. Hmm.
There's so much to unpack there. And I hear you saying underneath that, tell me if I understood this correctly, there is a part of you that always wants to go up to the next level. And I know for me, the pain of remaining where I am is scarier than the pain of putting myself out there. Does that resonate with you as well?
Yeah, which does make me now talk about George Carlin and David Copperfield, because that's the obvious transition here.
Okay, obviously. I was going to go.
Okay, so let's chat about this. So there's something to be learned in terms of how big time performers, and the terminology for this, if I have it right, at least from the comedy world, is that they burn material. So back in the day, George Carlin would go on HBO nearly every single year. And whether you liked his comedy or not, think about the effort it would take to craft a whole 1 hour routine. But then by going on HBO, by doing the special, he couldn't tour with that act anymore. Comedy was a different category, where if you went to go see a band, if you went to go see a musician and they didn't sing the one hit song, you'd be angry. But like if you went and saw George Carlin and all he did was the same stuff you just saw him do on HBO and you paid $300 for the ticket, you might be a little upset. Now, he's an exception because toward the end of his career, he kind of rolled back on purpose into a bit of a greatest hits mechanism where in his final shows, here was something new. And then there'd be the pause and almost like you'd go to see Billy Joel and you hear the opening chords of Piano Man. You go, you ever notice that baseball is a lot different than football? And huge roar of the audience because they wanted to hear the classic stuff. David Copperfield, the magician, for many years, I think it was on ABC, would do a magic special nearly every year, if not every other year, which most of his time at that point, he did not yet own his own theater with his own name on it in Las Vegas. But at that point, they would do the show and then they would tour. And what was interesting about this was, again, you didn't want to see the exact same thing you saw on television, especially with magic, because most magic tricks ended in a surprise. And I read about this early on in different interviews from these two people, and something about the publishing of what's working now. Oh, does this start to sound familiar? Is what starts to encourage me to begin to push things in another direction. So this is where, in terms of the business training that I do, not just for hypnotists, but now also for entrepreneurs, there's this mindset around publishing exactly what's working right now, because we've all bought that thing that was teaching something that the person had not yet tested. I one time either made a friend or made an enemy out of someone in the hypnotic industry who goes, I'm writing a bunch of scripts for this issue to sell. And I go, have you done these with clients yet? And I didn't get a response. I got blocked. So I think we got the answer there. The same as my entry point to teaching business was that I was at a conference and someone was teaching a mechanism of Google AdWords. I asked a simple follow-up question and he responded, he had never actually used the technique himself, which is dangerous. Mm-hmm. So instead, the mindset of teaching what's working right now and the sort of positioning came about years ago by going, I can give you exactly what's working right now. There's even some marketing campaigns that are running on one of my websites that I've given my students permission to say, here it is. You can use it with the same name if you want. You might want to change it, but here, let's get you up and running. And the reason why was that these were the assets that people needed to get up and running. This was something we had already proven to work. And back to the George Carlin, David Copperfield reference, why do I share exactly what's working now? Because you can't do it the exact same way that I do it.
Yep.
Which is not a challenge. It's not a negative statement. You can't do it the way that I do it because you shouldn't do it the way that I do it. You need to make it your own. This is where my teaching mentality sometimes is. Let me go into the almost insane attention to detail levels. So this way you understand the how and the why beneath it. This way now you can go off and make something completely of your own.
I love this so much. And one of the things that I want anyone listening to take away is Jason is talking about finding someone and modeling someone who is actually doing it. Find someone who has laid that groundwork and has proven this in their own practice. And I think this is kind of the yin and the yang of imposter syndrome. Is often we feel like we're not ready and we're not ready to call ourselves an expert. But on the flip side of the coin is if you are one step ahead of the person you are guiding, if you have just begun to experience, you can start to pull them toward you. And I found that as I teach others, it more firmly internalizes those truths for me and I come up and I'm able to pull them up. But when you are going and finding someone to model, especially in the business world, look at Jason. Jason is walking the walk. He's already doing it. So find someone who has some skin in the game.
Oh, I was thinking about what you just said there about how I love the definition that an expert often is that person who may just be one step ahead of you. And for any one thing that you do that comes extremely natural to you is someone else's very specific pain point. And it's where there's two correlations here, one in terms of the industry that you and I are in of hypnotists, but also within business, to recognize when we may be doing something based on tradition. So by becoming an instructor in hypnosis, now, you know, having taught thousands of people around the world, it's driven me inside of the work that I do with my clients to sometimes ask the question, does this step of the process absolutely have to be there? What happens if we remove it? Oh, I got the result even faster. Cool. Now it's something the client can do on their own. And yes, here's moments. Let's pull this out. and it didn't work. Oh dear, let's put that right back in. The same as in business. There's an accountant that I previously worked with that, just to set the stage for this, doing the bookkeeping in QuickBooks Pro online, by checking in by phone several times throughout the year. Here came the phone call. Hey, Jason, when do you want to come out to Fairfax and look at the final numbers? And my response was, why? We have it all online. Is everything lined up as we expected? Yeah. We were guessing that I'd owe about this amount. What do I owe? Less. Oh, cool. Do I have to come? I mean, I like you. But recognizing where we're doing things based on tradition and challenging that model, so it kind of breaks the whole those who can't teach. No, those who teach build that mastery.
Yes. Yes. I feel like that's the, I've seen studies that say that's the best way to be build mastery. We can read it. We can watch it. We can do it. But the best way to really build it into our neurology is to teach it.
Although here's something that I did years ago, and I consistently do this. And the rule that I've now set inside of what I do is that I can't teach it until I've proven for myself that it works. So like there's a segment inside of one of my trainings where we change the structure of how people come into one of my businesses, where now you can't call that business. They watch a webinar. The webinar invites them to pay a deposit. The deposit then gets them access to my calendar, to which we then have a conversation, then book the program. So we tested that for a good 6 or 7 months. It worked. I picked it up, did the Carlin Copperfield game, and went, hey, everybody, here it is. You can't actually use this as it is, though, because there's a lot of stock images and a lot of my stories. But here's the transcript, here are the slides, modify, make it your own. Meanwhile, here's my new version of it. And, you know, full disclosure, here's why I'm not giving you the new one yet, because it's 2 weeks old. You know, yes, it's already brought in one client, but I want to see more long-term evidence of this actually working. Though a cool mindset is that oftentimes we do this great in our businesses in terms of, let's start with the quote first, Lorne Michaels, Saturday Night Live, whether the show is ready or not, we go live at 11:30. So what the technique was doesn't matter, but there was a specific technique that I would teach my clients all the time and use it for a quick little self-hypnosis change process. And yet in my head, I'm getting frustrated because I'm like, this technique has never worked for me though. Like I can teach it to a client and I could bank on the fact that I've taught this to hundreds of other people and it worked for them, but I'm getting annoyed that I can't make it work for me. So what did I do? At this point in the story, I was hosting a meetup and I scheduled 6 months out from now, how to do XYZ technique as self-hypnosis, which created this ticking time clock that meant I've got 6 months to figure this out. And was noticing then by really digging into the method, digging into the principles, oh, here's the missing gap, at least for me. Here's how we take something that's meant to be a visual experience and bring in the other emotional, bring in the other representational states. So by calling that shot, as it were, you know, the old story of Babe Ruth pointing to the outfield, and that's my one sports metaphor that I can pull off. the story of calling that home run and pointing to exactly where it was going to go, and then giving myself that time range to go, this is when I'm going to do it by, which really put that sort of, you know, fire under the kettle, as it were, to go, this is when I'm going to figure this out by. So anytime we can set that out, I see too many people who go, you know, I'm going to launch a podcast one day, or maybe I'll do a course. Well, once I have enough interest, then I'll schedule. No, schedule that thing.
Yes.
Make it real. Stick it on the calendar, set up reminders leading up to it, even if it is, you know, 7, 8, 9 months out. But once it's now scheduled, that's when it becomes real. And you're going to figure that thing out.
Yes, I love that so much. Jason, you mentioned that sometimes in a protocol, you'll say, do we really need this piece? And you'll pull it out. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. So you might put it back in. And something you wrote when you booked this appointment, this podcast interview, really jumped out at me. And I think this is a perfect place to plug it in. This isn't the cool one that I mentioned a moment ago. That one's still coming.
Oh, the cliffhangers.
Yes. How to really live in the there's no failure, only feedback reality. So many people don't start because they're so afraid of what if it doesn't work. So will you talk about that?
So let me give the end result first. It's a myth that you have to have multiple streams of income in your business. It's a myth that you have to, you absolutely should. Because then suddenly here's whatever event occurs, where now here's other things that are running and have things in momentum. The same as, you know, if we look at fitness, if we look at health, I know you've got, you know, significant weight loss as part of your backstory, and so do I. And here's the day that here's the minor injury. And it's not going to be the make or break moment, because still, well, I'm eating right and I'm doing these things in a better way. And it's okay, I have to kind of take down the exercise for a bit. All right. Or here's the moment of going, okay, so I really fell in love with this heavy weightlifting. And even though I'm being appropriately cautious, yet still open-minded in the midst of a global pandemic, my gym was not emptying the trash or refilling the soap after 3 days. And I went, I'm out. And it became the thought process of, I've been thinking about doing like a 3-month reset. This is a good time to do it. Oh, 3 months, if only. So bringing that to mind here in terms of looking at the situation, if there's no failure, there's feedback. If we label something, and this is a principle out of standard communication, it's modeled inside of NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. The moment we stop and label something as a failure, we've now put a label on it, and that's where we're going to stick. If it's instead to look at a situation and ask, what can I do differently? How can I modify this? How can I take this to a better audience? That's where we start to see there's flexibility. So as much as we can to break out of this binary yes or no, one or zero thinking, and instead, here's all the moving pieces. I tell a quick story that I tried to mind read one of my audiences a number of years ago. And here was a mechanism that really built up my business. And I went, I'm going to teach a class on this one thing. And because I knew it was this good, I put together a whole website. I paid a graphic designer time to build things out. I shot a whole bunch of new videos, created a whole automated sequence, put together an ad campaign, was pouring money into ads. And I'm so proud to share, one person signed up. And then as that event played out, just to shorten the story, I went, you know, this other person at this conference is doing a training too. She goes, oh, I'd love to go to that. I was between yours and this one. I go, okay, cool. Lifetime access to my product. Let's walk you over. We got the day off. So if I stopped there, I could have gone, people don't want this. The most important thing that happened next was I asked a question. What's the biggest pain point? What are your goals in the next couple of years? I went back to that audience and asked them, what is it you want? And by hearing what they wanted, I then created the course, because I go, oh, that's this other thing that I do. I could offer that. Sold out the event, did it a couple of times running as well, put it into a program. It continuously brings in more people, continuously helps people to launch these segments of their businesses. So at any point in the journey, you know, to ask what's another option. It's like the little reference we both made a little while ago. All this stuff works. You just have to use it. You know, here's the day where, again, back to the exercise. This is one of those reasons why, you know, as the main focus of seeing clients for some time was working with athletes. And I've now pivoted that energy over to working with people who are business owners, people who are entrepreneurs. And public speaking is still just as much of an issue, even though it's now talking to a 3-inch box on the screen. The fact where the thing about the athlete, and again, negative language used in a positive way, the athlete becomes an expert in their own ailments. For anybody else, oh, my foot's hurting, I guess I'm not a runner. For the endurance runner, yeah, I got to get the racquetball and kind of do that roll around thing for a little while, and let me do the other foot instead. Here's the moment where I've worked with power lifters, with bodybuilders, and here's that moment where this part of the back is tender. And it's not every reason why they go, nope, I'm out. It's instead a bit of feedback to go, okay, well, I haven't been doing my stretching. I haven't been warming up properly. There's a reason behind everything, and to go inside of that reason and then ask, well, what other options are there? So this is where there's never that moment of labeling something as failure, because instead by asking, what can we do different about it? This is where oftentimes we discover new markets. I mean, I tell a quick story around this. That I was at a marketing convention and I was giving a presentation. At that point in my head, I was expanding the skills of the local practice seeing clients to be the personal development guru from the platform. And I forgot where I was in my presentation. And in the words of Steve Carell, Michael Scott on The Office, there's this one line of his from the show of, sometimes I just start talking and I just keep going until I figure out where I'm going. Which any of us who step in front of a microphone have done that at least once.
Yes.
At least. And it was one of those moments if I just started talking and hoping the memory kicked back in. and I screwed up my words. And I said, you know, your business can change people's lives, but you don't yet have the right words to inspire people to take action. And Lori, the whole room leaned in. And I went, okay, I'm doing this now.
Yes.
So oh, again, we land that message and we hear what that community wants. You know, the tech world calls it a pivot. I call it just listening.
That's incredible. Okay, this segues into what's next. Jason, you mentioned that you created that product because you were trying to mind read your audience. And I think so often we do this, and I know so many people who have put out products and nobody buys them. And I can raise my hand. The first product I did was like that. So when I read your intake form, you said, how to define your audience so well that trolls and armchair criticism doesn't faze you. So when you really know who you're talking to, everything falls into place. I would love for you to go down that rabbit trail.
All right. I am going to befriend 80% of this audience. I'm going to offend maybe 5% of them. So buckle up. Let's have some fun. I'm the guy who began by, in the hypnosis industry, seeing clients, but figuring out that the business side of things came naturally to me. And so I made the decision, because people were asking me for it, to be the guy who also talks about business to people that are in helping professions. Let me sidebar for a moment, because as much as this is all about the imposter monster, imposter syndrome has a couple of neighbors that I think are helpful to mention here. There's, in addition to imposter syndrome, there's savior syndrome, which a lot of people in helping professions often fall into. But I'm helping them. How can I charge them money for this?
Yes.
You know, the place where I was rather happy this morning when the family member of someone who I've done business with just paid full price for one of my programs. And I wasn't happy because I got the money, which yes, I was. I was also happy because it came with a note that read like an email that I've sent many times over. I know if I message you, you'd probably give me a cut, but if I don't pay for it full price, I'm not going to watch it. So thank you. Spend it on your kids. It's like, that's the kind of email that I send sometimes. So this place of that savior syndrome, that there's, again, this exchange of energy. And I mean that in a very straightforward way, that by someone investing time, energy, and money into something, we can give them a much better response.
Yes.
You know, there's a quick story of the guy when my wife and I were on our honeymoon, and the fact that he was so insistent on paying me this, I'll shorten the story, but I want you to help me quit smoking. I'm like, we're here in our honeymoon. This is our last night. I'll pay you whatever your fee is. And as he then got to, I'll pay you four times your fee. I'm getting a nudge. And I'm doing a stop smoking session in this hut, basically. And the guy hasn't smoked now in 13, 14 years. This stuff works. So super. So that mindset of savior syndrome, it needs to be addressed, because by having someone invest their time, energy, money, or some combination within there, inside of what they do, we all have books we're not going to read that are sitting on a shelf. We all have videos we're not going to watch. So to look at that exchange that we can create by breaking out of that savior syndrome, that's going to be one step of that. In terms of entrepreneurship, superhero syndrome comes into play too, which this one is where the person believes they are the only person who can do what they do. They are the only person, which this applies to the person who is trying to design their own website, trying to design their own business card. And to say it politely, they should not be the one designing. You know, so as much as outsourcing is a big part of what I do, that ability to hand it off, there's also something, and this is a bigger topic too, a newer one I've been chatting about, that if we can take what we do and turn it into a proprietary process, all of a sudden now, okay, so I've broken hypnotic influence for business into four components. And if I tried to sit here and said, no, I'm the guru of all of this and no one else can teach it, then all of a sudden I've created a business that's not scalable. I've created one that's always going to be stuck in that dollars for hours mindset. Put the emphasis on the audience. How can I serve more people? Well, you know what? Here's step three of this, which involves some effort. I could actually, inside of my high ticket program, I could actually include consulting inside of phase three of that. And you know what? That part doesn't necessarily have to be me. If only I knew a good 15,000 people around the world who had similar skills that could satisfy that part. And I'm beginning to hire out for other people to do some of that project work there too. I mentioned there's a fourth one now, taker syndrome.
Okay.
Give me a year, I'll have a better name for this one. But this is what often I've run into with people who are doing exceptionally well in their businesses. And all of a sudden, here comes this mentality of almost guilt that, you know, they're successful while other people are struggling. And this mindset of I'm only taking, which I'd say the solution to this very often is to go into that place of looking at the assets that we've shared. You do this podcast, I do two podcasts, the videos that we put out, the testimonials. So I think the solution to the four of these often, especially as a business owner, is yes, to listen to that occasional criticism, but also to have that time to go back and really read through those reviews and testimonials, which is, I went off on this tangent, Lori, I've expertly forgotten your original question.
It is, let me peek back at how to define your audience so well that trolls and armchair criticism don't faze you.
Okay, so I started this is where we were originally before we went off on that journey. I started this with originally being the business guy who's talking to hypnotists. Here's where the 5% get a little upset about this. I know for a fact, because I've already had it many times over, there's people who would walk by the table of mine at a conference and would immediately dismiss what I do before they'd even look at it. My favorite movie of all time is Monty Python, Life of Brian, because it shows just how quickly new beliefs can be installed. And whether you like the way that they took it or not, it's a funny movie. Great ending number, by the way. So there's a part of the audience that's going to hate my message, no matter what I say. And it's got nothing to do with me. There was a guy who was in a Facebook group the other week going, the end of the story first. Yeah, but then I turned this into a marketing campaign and brought people into my community because of it. Thanks. Where he was there going, why is it so many people are so excited about bringing in more competition into the industry? I go, because the more we're all successful when you're out there doing quality work in my industry, it helps what I do as well. So thank you.
Yes.
So by defining that audience, by knowing exactly who they are, and this is where it's going to be a combination of doing that market research yourself and really going beyond just what we can find on websites, but really asking people. Mm-hmm. And this is also going to inform how we communicate to that audience. I know that for the business influence stuff that I do for entrepreneurs, not just within the hypnotic industry, they hate the hypey sales stuff. They click away when they see the guy in the garage showing off all of his cars, which is why I've done several photos of me in front of the minivan. There are no accidents inside of a lot of what I do. But by knowing who that audience is, it becomes this place where now if there's someone who has an opinion about it, you know, I draw a correlation, and this is metaphorical for those not in the hypnotic profession, but our good friend Richard Nongard, there's a whole conflict in the hypnotic industry around, are scripts good or bad? To which we all end up saying the same thing. These are a historical record of one way you could do things. They're a good way to learn language patterns. Can we move on? We get the point now. But Richard has the ultimate response to this. The people who are against that method are either one, lying, and they're actually using them. Two, not actually seeing clients, therefore their opinion really doesn't matter, armchair philosophy. Or three, they have memorized chunks of patter that could have been scripted out, but now it's so internalized that it doesn't have to be a thing on paper.
Yes.
So we find the same thing in business too, that again, it comes around to this intention to the individual by looking at who this audience is, who's this for, who is this not for. I don't tell these next two stories to go, look how clever I am, but it's instead to say, when you know your audience, you can step into this nothing to lose mindset. I'm at a conference one time, and as a bonus I've done sometimes would be that if you sign up for the online program at the event, I have these little flash drives. You can take all the content with you downloaded. And this guy walks over and he picks it up and he goes, I don't know, I've got a bunch of courses I haven't even watched. How is yours any different? It's like, well, if that's your method of engaging with material, it's probably going to be about the same. Well, how much is it anyway? Well, it's online at that. I'll use the numbers now. It's online for $2,000, but people who sign up here get it for a few hundred less. Oh, that sounds expensive. Well, you haven't even asked me what's inside of it, so you can't gauge that yet. I'm going to sell you a car for $10,000. Does that sound good? And this is where I have a place in my brain called Nothing to Lose, and it's fun there. And he goes, well, what's your return policy anyway? And I reach over and politely, let me disclaimer, he was smaller than I was, politely took the card out of his hand and said, it doesn't matter because you're not going to buy it anyway. And even if you did, you wouldn't watch and you'd be asking for a refund. So let me save you some frustration here. And not for the sake of the bragging rights, but the guy next to him reaches into his wallet, pulls out an American Express and goes, I'll take it.
Awesome.
Why? He goes, I need to respond that way to like half the people who call me.
Yes.
Which, again, by defining who our audience is, this is also where it's not just about socioeconomic class. It's not just about who they are, their background. It's where we can start by way of hypnotic influence methods, start to really dictate that journey moving forward. So the people who are willing to watch our videos, engage in our dialogues, fill out the form online. Maybe I know you do this too. Ask for a deposit, even book that time. It's going to make it so by the time they get to us, we're only spending our time with those people who are ready, willing, and ready to jump in. The other story I promised there, and this was the moment of, I thought it was a client, and no, I was answering the phone, and you should always do some market research before you go for a too bold close. Hey, I see you use this software. I sell one that's cheaper and less confusing. Do you want to buy it? That was his sales pitch. To which I go, well, by comparison, I don't find that software expensive. And second of all, I don't find it confusing. So I'm really not interested at all in having this conversation. How many sales have you made this morning? Well, what does that matter? Well, I'm just curious because I teach people how to better engage with their prospects. And you started off with a mind read, which you missed, which means you've broken rapport. You're just lucky I'm in my car and I've got 10 minutes to spare. What criteria do you typically use when you're looking for software? And he started to answer. I was like, do you see how you're giving me your buying criteria? And now if I knew my software fit into that criteria, I would present the offer to you in such a way that now mirrored what you were looking for. And ethically speaking, if the criteria you're now feeding me is not what my software provides, I'd respectfully bow out of the call. And that's how we completely can eliminate buyer's remorse. Makes sense? He goes, how do you learn this stuff? I go, well, I have a program where I teach this. It's something that I've taught live for like $5,000 in person. We have a promo running online right now for $3,000. What's your email address? I'll send you a link.
Amazing.
Turn the telemarketer. But it's again, by understanding that audience, where now here comes the person where, as the wise philosopher Taylor Swift would say, haters gonna hate. And to recognize where that trolling moment possibly has nothing to do with you. It's some story that they're stuck inside of, and to not feed it, to not go into that negative energy. It's instead, again, this place of resiliency to go, well, I don't think it's a match for you. I wish you the best.
Two quick things I want to interject for the audience. One is the strategy that you've mentioned a couple times, your velvet rope strategy?
That's embedded inside of it.
I teach
from a principle of compliance precedes suggestibility. So if we ever want someone to become, and we're going to use hypnotic language patterns here, if we're going to ask somebody for a sale, a next step, engagement of some level, the more we can have them following a series of steps before we go for that ask. So this is why, even though I've got a big mailing list of people who have engaged either with my book or the Hypnotic Language Hacks podcast or the Work Smart Hypnosis podcast or whatever mechanism, I'm always looking at how can I re-engage that audience? Because you and I both know we could just simply broadcast a video out to go, here it is. But if I said, here's a new on-demand webinar, go here to get it. And they have to opt in and they have to get it on schedule. Now the viewers go up.
Yes.
So the best illustration of this is when I was moving out of the office that I was out of before I came to this one, which I'm about to move out of as well, moving down to Florida. This experience where the guy goes, hey, you're that hypno guy, which is the official certification title. And he goes, how much is it to quit smoking? I am meant to come over and ask you. And I was like, there's a quick 10-minute video on my website that explains everything. He goes, I'm not going to watch a 10-minute video. And I go, you're probably not going to quit smoking with me then. 6 months go by, the phone rings. He goes, I finally watched it. I'm ready. Amazing. So this is the power of media. I say this to someone who's putting out regular media, running your own groups, putting out your own podcast. By educating, 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 this is my favorite ethical aspect of this. Now the people who are a match for what we do will continue along. And the people who are not a match for what we do are going to respectfully bow out on their own. This is the ultimate in branding because there's people, I don't know what number iPhone I have now. I think the 12 is the newest one. maybe they'll do a 13. They might do the elevator thing and just jump straight to 14 or just change the name again. But there's people out there who have already decided they're going to buy the new iPhone and they don't even know what it is yet. And the same is as we can build that loyal fan base by, again, responding to their needs, sharing what they're looking for. And if we're talking business, people are always shopping based on two factors. How can I do something faster and easier? Help them do that. You've got an audience for life.
Incredible. For people who are listening and don't access the show notes, because this will be in the show notes, how would a person find the program you talked to the telemarketer about?
Yeah. So let me give two references for this one then. Hypnotic Language Hacks is the business podcast that I put out every week, comes out on Wednesdays. Wherever you can track down podcasts, do a search for Hypnotic Language Hacks. And then for the actual business influence training program, that's over at jasonlinette.com. And Lori, I think you've heard me say this before. Don't worry about the spelling. I own all the misspelled websites. They all redirect to the right place.
So if you go to
jasonlinette.com, top of the page is where you'll see a tab for business influence systems. That'll actually give you access to a free on-demand video that teaches you how to create videos that have people wanting more from you, even before you make an offer and intros that program too. That's at jasonlinette.com.
This is such a great segue into where I wanted to go next, because when I heard you say that, I own all the spellings, you were standing on stage in front of, in my mind, it was thousands of people. I can't remember how large a room was, but I just was so
I think
impressed.
It was just over 3,200, they said at that event.
Okay, yeah. It was thousands of people. And it was just this beautiful venue. Some of the people that were giving you feedback were some people that I follow, Shailene Johnson, Pat Flynn. It was just incredible. And I saw you up there representing our industry in such just, the lady next to me was like, who is this guy? And at the end when it was a competition at the end when we voted, I saw her write Jason Lynette. And I just remember seeing you up there and thinking how awesome it is that you have that relentless pursuit for more and more excellence. So will you just talk to me a little bit about what got you to that place on stage? Maybe talk a little bit about that event and talk to people who are afraid to show up, whether it's on a metaphorical stage or a physical stage. Just what do you have for those people?
Yeah. And thank you for all that too, especially, the commentary and what that stands for people. And yes, also thank you for the photo of that, that I keep using. You got the better image.
Oh, good.
I would say this goes back to when I launched the Work Smart Hypnosis podcast, which is the program that goes out, the one that you've been on twice, the one that goes out specifically to the hypnosis industry, which again, back to the other conversation about know your audience, even I'm amused that that's now become the main source of my private clients. And it always follows the same dialogue. They go, yeah, I listened to a few episodes. I'm not the audience, am I? I'm like, well, it's very much meant for a group of hypnotists who already do hypnosis. It's not trying to introduce it to new people. They go, yeah, it was fascinating. Why did I keep listening though? It's like, well, good conversation. Thank you. Yeah. So by defining that audience, so the story behind this, the reason I bring that up, I mentioned earlier, I used to run a meetup group. There's a line that I learned from the magic world, from the theater world. It came out of vaudeville. The amateur changes their act. The professional changes their audience. So looking at that moment of, I was hosting a monthly meetup, and these people are all still my friends, despite what I'm about to say next. I looked out, it's like, oh, it's the same 25 people every single month and very little variation. And again, bring this to a place of ethical responsibility, that this message needs to go out to a bigger audience. That's where I kept the meetup going for a while. Eventually they were all going, hey, are you hosting this online? I went, yep, we're closing that thing down. And that became the Work Smart Hypnosis online training brand. So by taking that message now into a podcast that's been going out for well over 7 years at this point, more than 300 episodes, millions of downloads all around the world, of taking that message to a bigger audience. Now looking at that same mechanism, this is where, again, listening to your audience, I would have a client come in for issues around public speaking. And in the 21st century, we all Google each other. We all look people up. We all try to figure out who people are before we do anything with them. So what was happening was that, and again, remember I told the story that clients were finding me from a podcast meant to be a very niche specific, I'll tell you the internal dialogue. It's FUBU from Damon John, for us, by us, just for hypnotists. So what was happening though was my clients were coming in and we'd be working on public speaking. And yet here they'd come into like usually the second or third appointment is when they'd wait to spring this on me. They'd bring in like a printout of their presentation they were working on and go, I saw your video of from that conference in Vegas where you were teaching about how to open up a presentation to have the audience, one, stay in the room, which is helpful for a talk, and two, want to take action with you. Could you look at my presentation and tell me where I could do that? And at first, you know, the brain was segmented to go, no, that's what I do over here. We're here for this emotional thing. And this is why I do a lot of what I do now, which is that we can build the confidence up based on the emotions. And to use the branding, if you can go into that next opportunity with a few hypnotic language hacks for ethical influence to know that you're delivering your message in such a way that now it's going to create even more impact. Think about the changes in your confidence that's going to create too. Mm. So it's about combining that emotional mind connection as well as the strategy where now I know, you mentioned modeling, I know if it's my time to then pivot from education into offer. I am channeling Steve Jobs because the amount of nerdy excitement that he would have on that platform as he was showing you the new feature of whatever device, which created that dynamic of people rejoining a movement. People wanted to be a part of whatever it was, even if it was something that, you know, was going to be replaced many years later. So people wanted to be a part of that energy. So by bringing into that energy of we're now doing this with purpose, with intention, that's what happens where we look at that. So now by taking that moment where the clients were coming in and asking for advice on their presentations, and so often it'd be, oh, this is good. Oh, this is a great story. You should open with that. No, I'm supposed to get up and introduce myself first. I'm like, no, different's better than better. Get up, break the pattern, bring people in, invite your audience to care about your message before you ever ask them to listen. So really it was by listening to my private clients that suddenly it became, here's the NLP training that I offered for a while, which then became Work Smart NLP, now became the Business Influence Program over at jasonlinette.com. And it was by listening to that audience, by going, I want to be able to go back and listen to this over and over. I want to be able to go back and access these specific applications. So I think the answer goes back really to where we first began this conversation. Put that ownership on them. And the best thing that you can do is listen. That's where you're going to get the best feedback. I took a program that was selling exceptionally well, where it used to be, one of my other programs used to be $47 a month recurring membership, which a lot of people are doing that right now. And I asked the audience, hey, how do you really want this? And they all said lifetime access. And I responded, I think the fair way to do that though, the churn rate of most online communities is about a year and a half if you're lucky. I think to make this fair, I'd have to triple the price and charge you 3 years up front. And they responded, that sounds good.
Wow.
Okay. Gave the audience what they wanted. And now it's the model of raving fans rather than lifelong dependence. So really the answer to all of this is put that ownership on the audience, listen to what they're looking for, deliver what they're asking for. And even so, it's that evolution over time that people really, really respond to. So amateur changes their act, professional changes their audience. We don't have to leave behind the old audience. We don't have to let go. This is why so much of what I do is about teaching principles of automation. This has been a video the entire time, Lori, just the questions are lining up. But the opportunity of, again, asking, how do I do this better? How do I do this better? How do I serve that audience? I think those are the real principles inside of that.
I love this so much. Real quick, you had mentioned that your intended audience was people who do what you do, other hypnotists, and yet you've accidentally attracted many clients who were not hypnotists. And it makes me think of Tim Ferriss, who I think you and I both have followed for quite some time. Yeah. He was actually the very first podcast I ever listened to. I had been following in him and he said, I'm going to do this thing called a podcast. And that's what got me into it. And I found out that his ideal client, his intended audience was 20 something year old men in Silicon Valley. And at first I was a little bit offended because here I am a 40 year old woman who just like Tim Ferriss, I am where I am today because of Tim Ferriss and many other people, but he's the one that opened this world to me. And I thought,
oh yeah, same here. When you approach any task, ask yourself, how do I do this once?
Is that a Tim Ferriss question?
That's maybe a paraphrase of a Tim Ferriss moment. Yeah.
And he is just the king of empowering questions. His fear setting is what got me to quit my job as a hairstylist and become a full-time hypnotist. So nice. I love how you have really driven home the point that when we really narrow our audience, when we decide exactly who we're speaking to, and we go all in and choose a niche, that we actually attract people from the outside of that niche as well. And as we continue to walk that path and listen to what people want and use their words to give them what they want, everything falls into place.
And this is where at any point in the game, we can pivot, where suddenly he became the guy known for the health podcast. He suddenly became the guy for the angel investing podcast and talked about a dog whistle. I still subscribe to that program. I don't necessarily listen to every single episode, but again, just like the story of Steve Jobs with Apple, people are now part of that tribe because they like the mission of it, which is where you as a podcast host as well. It's our responsibility as the host to go, okay, so I know you're not involved with this world, but here's why I want you to hear it. You know, the easiest example of this is for the hypnosis podcast that I do. Again, know your audience. Here's the moment that I have the stage hypnotist on, and the people who are clinging to the word hypnotherapist are going, oh, I don't do that. It's like, well, here's what you need to hear from this. Here's the message that's going to be inside of this. The opportunity that framing is everything. So you're right that in terms of pivoting that, and it's where listening to their specific need, this is why at one point my business program for hypnotists, that's more of the how and the what to do it, and here's the assets to get up and running. When that first came out, that was called Hypnosis Business Bootcamp. And in the process of changing the pricing structure, it was a good opportunity to change the name. It became Hypnotic Business Systems. Part of the reason behind that was with a name called Hypnosis Business Bootcamp, only hypnotists were joining it. When it became Hypnotic Business Systems, what happened then was I could make fun of the product and sell it to the acupuncturist. I could make fun of the, hey, okay, look, I'm going to say a lot of weird hypno jargon in this thing, but business is business. This is what you're going to learn. Wow. And again, by really listening to that audience, they wanted more of the languaging. So we've kept Hypnotic Business Systems running as strong as it ever was, if not more, but people wanted the languaging stuff, to which I went, oh, cool. We need to build business influence as a program, which is now getting into the calibration to others, getting into the state management in terms of ourselves, the language patterns, and only then getting into the applications, which was not something I sat down one day and thought, let me come up with something to sell. No, it was instead by listening to what people were asking. It's like, well, it's the way that you made that transition that is why I wanted it. It's the way I always credit someone you also know, Michael DeShalit, who now lives in Las Vegas. People join that influence community of mine because they're expecting objection crushers and closing strategies. I think Michael DeShalit has the best closing line of any business person I know. Okay, so what do you want to do?
Nice.
Because by the time everything else is established, that's covered.
Right. Jason, I feel like you have dropped so many gems. If I were to unpack some of them, we would be here all day. I want to honor your time. Is there anything before we say goodbye that we haven't covered that you would like to cover?
Yeah, I'd say let's go a little bit further into the superhero syndrome.
I would love that.
One of the bigger issues that I see is people build businesses that are completely dependent upon them. And dollars for hours is a massively noble way to run your business. That being said, it's going to wear on you. Mm-hmm. Any of us who run our own businesses have heard the phrase that if you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life. And those people are liars. Some days it's a job. Let's call it out. There's some days that here's something at the kid's school that I really wanted to be at, but I'd made a commitment for a client and that's now scheduled. Here were moments where the convention I was attending was overlapping the first few days of school because suddenly they changed the dates of both at the same time. And couldn't predict that, but I'd already committed. So we find this balance to it. So one of the bigger themes is to go inside of what you do. And I, again, bring it back to the same theme we keep hitting here. You owe it to your audience to do this. Mm-hmm. You don't have to turn all of it into a product, but chances are there are segments of what you do that could become a product. And I've seen people do this now from things that I've taught them in industries that we wouldn't even imagine. How to better prepare your home in advance of this renovation so we're done faster and you don't have to pay us as much.
Wow.
And here was the contractor who was showing a few quick little fixes of things to go, okay, so here's this, here's that. If you can take care of this in advance, this is what the paint cost if we do it. If you went to Home Depot and had it in your house already, it's going to save you this percentage. And just this way that we can productize what we do. I have an accountant who has a whole educational arm of what he does before he begins working with people. And sounds negative, but it's the same phrase that I use. You don't want to pay me to teach you stuff that I've already productized. Mm. So this is where if someone hires me as a consultant, I go, this has to be a hybrid approach. Where now, okay, so you want to work on the writing for your websites? Good. Go through the training. Do two or three drafts. Then as we meet, let's do punch up. Rather than me sit there and go, here's how you do bullet points. No, we've already got that in a product form. So the superhero syndrome fits into that because yes, not everything can become an automated on its own product. But I'll tell you the big theme that I'm pushing people towards these days is that in terms of a sales funnel of your business, if you can position yourself at the bottom of your funnel, you're going to be serving an audience even better. You're going to be reaching even more people. You're going to be leading a much more comfortable life. You're going to be only working with people who you are absolutely excited to be helping with. So the nature of what I do now is everyone has to go through some sort of product gateway. They have to go through that first. And now my clients are the people in those communities. I have the standard issues. I have no issues with no-shows. I have no issues with non-compliant clients. It was someone who's known in the marketing world, Dan Henry, who posted something a while ago, which is he goes, low ticket clients. Hey, can we cancel next month payment? Can I actually spread out even further? High ticket clients. Hey, Lori, I sent you the 5,000. Thanks again.
When do we do it again?
Yeah. Yep. So as we put that emphasis towards, again, duplicating ourselves, even if it's like a 30-minute thing, a one-hour thing, something that's not even a high dollar amount, it's going to allow you to reach that bigger audience of people who provide even more value in your marketplace and change that dynamic as to who gets to you now. You're going to see better results and take that, apply that to every industry.
This is so amazing. So I've never asked anyone this question before, and I think you'll appreciate this. Jason, if you could have a billboard anywhere and have anything written on it, knowing that millions of people would see it, what would that billboard say?
Uh-oh, here we go. Let's see. You'll edit this part out for time.
I just had to channel Tim Ferriss for this part.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you want me to be more specific?
Oh. No, yeah, I'll tell you one. Step away. Which, if we define ourselves by, one of my favorite things is if I'm at a conference, especially in the hypnosis industry, people go, wow, it looks like you're doing a lot these days. And I respond, it sure looks that way, doesn't it? Slightly away from strategy with no negativity away from inside of this. I mentioned growing up, the family business was in the home. And I learned the lesson pretty early on to go that they were on all the time. It would be the game of we'd eat dinner at this time because that was in between appointments. We would do this because that was the schedule that fit inside of that. And again, there's no negativity in bringing this up because instead for me to go, if I set, and this is my phrasing of this, if I set the rules of the universe, I don't have to break it. So the thinking of this is like, you know, R. Tolkien came up with the world of everything Lord of the Rings before writing. J.K. Rowling came up with the world of Harry Potter before beginning to write. TV shows like even Breaking Bad or the graphic novels that became the TV show Walking Dead, Star Wars, they started with the rules of the universe and then built around that. So I say step away because as much as we've now spent the last hour or so kind of, you know, loving on productivity and reaching an audience, we get some of the best insights by leaving it behind. Mm. Moments where I turn the computer off, the phone doesn't forward to my cell phone when I leave the office, if it was a physical office. The moments where, yes, I have received the voicemail on a Sunday morning, three times in a row, I know you're there, pick up, which is not how voicemail works anymore. And that's the person I'm going to make wait until Tuesday afternoon at about 4:30 in the afternoon to call back. Because I'm not going to train that level of responsiveness. So this is where to build that time where this is when I do it. My calendar is so wonderfully color-coded And the one that says block, the ones where I go in and I block off time so you can't book me. So when I send my calendar to you, you can't trick it out and go, well, if I actually open up that time, I could do something here. No, by blocking that time. And yes, Lori, that's the one that's purple. By blocking off that time, half the audience just smiled. By blocking off that time, that's that opportunity to step away. So as much as we can, you know, there's the Michael Gerber line of don't just work in your business, work on your business. I also say step away from it. You know, have a life outside of what you do. Be involved with your kids' lives. Be involved with your relationships. Have interest beyond the one thing that you do. That's going to make you so much better at everything else. Balance.
Jason, thank you so much. This has been absolutely brilliant, and I'm very grateful for your time.
Well, thank you for having me. And I'm loving what you're doing these days. And again, from hearing your story too, of I try not to teach this as a mechanism because it's difficult to say to everybody, hey, quit your job, do something better. But you did that. And that's one of my favorite things in the world, to go, just because you're good at something doesn't mean you have to do it the rest of your life, and to find that passion. And here's the exciting part of it. As part of my audience has not really changed, but kind of morphed, it's where 5 years from now, there you'll be with a slightly different, let's say, expanded audience.
For sure.
The same way as we talked about Tim Ferriss. It was someone on his program I heard say, never compare your beginning to someone else's middle.
Mm.
So to kind of chart where we are, we're all in this together and we all keep growing at it. So congrats on what you've been doing and keep it up.
Thank you so much. I'm so grateful you've listened all the way to the end. What is one tiny action step you'll take now based on an aha moment you got during the podcast? Maybe that life-changing action step is to come accept the gift I have for you at theimpostermonster.com. Head there right now to get your powerful hypnosis audio, The Answer Room, that lets you make important decisions and get crystal clear about your next step forward on this path of purpose in your one great and precious life.